This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to the Horses in the Morning show on the Horse Radio Network for October 4th, 2012, episode 502. Horses in the Morning is live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the summer, so today we bring you a highlight podcast from the Horse Radio Network. Sit back and enjoy episode 28 of the Equestrian Legends show. Seven-time winner of the Polo Excellence Award Women Player of the Year, Sunny Halo joins Glenn the Geek to talk about growing up in a polo family, her passion for the game of polo, and the amazing strides that its sport has taken over the past 40 years, thanks to her efforts. Horses in the Morning will be back live tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, replete with riotous reports regarding all things equine. And don't forget to surf the web for the silliest, snarkiest, and snappiest of classifieds and email them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com and put really bad ads in the subject line. On Friday, we'll share with you the top dozen and the listener who submitted what Glenn and Jamie decide is the best of the worst will win a fantastic Flexen fork from Equity Manufacturing. And a notable holiday I must mention before we begin our equestrian audio adventure, Happy National Frappe Day. Gather a few like-minded horse friends, and depending on where you're from, enjoy a pseudo milkshake for you New Englanders, a fruity frozen dessert if you're in the eat all things healthy section of the country, or you can have an expensive cup of coffee with a frothy top for those of you in the Northwest. Enjoy the show!
The name Pessoa is legendary in equestrian circles. During his phenomenally successful career as a rider, Nelson Pessoa set his sights on creating the ultimate in saddle design. Not satisfied with the perfection of balance, aesthetics, and craftsmanship, Nelson's goal was to provide riders of every level the opportunity to train and compete in a true competition-level saddle, a saddle that would be an aid to their balance and riding style while offering a comfortable fit for almost any horse. Most importantly, Nelson felt the saddle was a tool that riders should not miss out on because of price. With these goals, the modern-day Pessoa was born and has come to encompass saddles, strap goods, horse boots, and blankets. That's right, Pessoa has some of the finest bridal work available today. The quality is unmatched with their ample selection of bridles, reins, martingales, and accessories. From the quality and suppleness of the leather to the fine stitchwork and craftsmanship, Pessoa strap goods are top of the line. To learn more about Pessoa bridal work and all of the other fine products at Pessoa, ask your local retailer or visit them online at PessoaUSA.com. That's PessoaUSA.com. Sunny Hale is a true pioneer in the world of women's polo, following her mother's footsteps and taking the sport to places her mother could only dream of. Sunny Hale has truly transformed polo on and off the field. She is the youngest legend we have highlighted to date. She is only in her 40s, but her accomplishments and contributions place her in the equestrian legends category. Sunny was the first woman in U.S. history to win the U.S. Open Polo Championship. She is a seven-time winner of the Polo Excellence Award, Woman Player of the Year. Sunny attained the highest rating ever given to a woman in the history of the sport of 5 goals after winning the U.S. Open Polo Championship with Outback Steakhouse Polo Team in 2000. She founded numerous organizations to enhance the sport of polo, and she has played polo around the world. She took what was a man's sport and helped to make it a sport for athletes of all genders. Her list of winning credits and awards is much longer than we can recite here. Equestrian legend, Sunny Hale. Well, hello, Sunny, and welcome to the Equestrian Legends show. And congratulations, by the way, on being the youngest equestrian legend so far on the show.
Well, thank you, Glenn. It's a pleasure to be on your show today.
I want to start, like we always do, by going back in time and talking a little bit about growing up. And where were you born?
I was born in Carmel, California.
And it was on a ranch?
Actually, also. But no, I was born in Carmel, and I grew up on a ranch in Carmel Valley, California.
Terrific.
And that's in Northern California.
And you grew up in a horsey family, didn't you?
Yeah, I grew up basically on the back of a horse, on ponies, on horses, everything that resembled a horse from the time I was, before I could walk. That was kind of our babysitter, was our mom put us on ponies, and as long as we were on the pony, she kind of knew where we were. So, I grew up, that's pretty much how I spent all of my time.
As a matter of fact, you were quoted in an article some time ago by saying that you had your coloring books on the pony, and you were actually coloring the coloring books while you rode the pony around.
No joke. That was a normal part of the day. Yes.
Now, your mom, of course, is a legend also in the world of polo. Tell us about your family.
Well, basically, our family, like everybody's, has a really unique story in that my mom, it was her passion to play polo and to be accepted into the Polo Association, which until 1972, she was the first woman to be accepted as a rated one gold player in sanctioned events. So she really broke the gender barrier in our sport. And with that came, all of us kids, there was five kids, and, we were all introduced to polo through her. And that truly was where I got my start, and it just took off from there.
Well, let's talk about, it's Sue Sally Hale, right? Your mom?
Uh-huh, yep.
And she actually, to expand upon her story a little bit, she actually played polo with the guys and sort of hid the fact that she was a woman for a period of time.
Yeah, for people that are of that generation will realize, and for some younger folks that don't really realize what that was like, back when she was wanting to play polo, it wasn't that women didn't play polo. They did play polo, and they have for decades. But what was not, hadn't happened at that point was that women were accepted into the United States Polo Association as rated players, able to play in sanctioned competitions, and that's what she truly wanted to do. So she campaigned for 20 years and at some point did disguise herself as a man to be able to do that, to play in sanctioned tournaments. And so it's an amazing story in itself, what she went through to be able to open that door to play, because that's what she wanted to do. So in 1972, that's what she was able to accomplish when she got her first membership card. And it truly is an amazing story. And she comes from a very prominent Hollywood family that was into movies, and her father was a screenwriter, and then her stepfather, when her father passed away, was a stuntman. So she grew up in an amazing background in Santa Monica, but polo was definitely what she wanted to do and gave her life for.
I have a quote from her from an article some time ago, and she competed during the 50s and 60s this is her quote: "I pushed my long hair under a hat and wore a large shirt. I never spoke a word. Only the guys on my team knew I was a girl." So
yeah,
I mean, that gives you goosebumps when you think about it.
Yeah, no, it's truly amazing if you think about it today, because women are so much more accepted into so many different things. So it's hard to really grasp what that was like back then. But that's what she grew up, wanting to do, and just didn't give up until she was able to do it. So the stories of I run into people all the time that knew her back, whether it's from the 50s, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And that just never changed. So it's truly amazing, all the different, character stories that go on with how she came about to do what she wanted to do.
Now, you have four siblings that you grew up with. And, of course, your formal name is not really Sunny.
You did research. What did you find out?
I found out your formal name is really Sunset. So tell us your siblings' names, because there has to be a story here.
Yeah, I don't know what the actual story is or what exactly was going on. I've heard all kinds of options. But, I have there's five kids, and the oldest brother is Brooke. Then the next one was Stormy. Next one was Dawn, who was a girl, myself, and my youngest, the youngest sibling, his name is Trail. So there was five of us. We definitely took some ridicule in school.
I bet.
So I'm not sure what the real answer is, what was going on with the names, but we definitely took some heat over it.
I bet you did. Were you always known as Sunny?
Yeah, pretty much. I always go by Sunny, yeah.
Yeah. Now, your mom actually was the one, obviously, that got you started, but and you rode ponies. Do you remember your first pony?
Probably my favorite pony. I rode all kinds of ponies, but my favorite was a black pony called Pistol Pete.
Why was Pistol Pete your favorite?
Oh, he was just the coolest pony, and my favorite color is a black horse, and that Pistol had everything. He was black, he was fun, and spent a lot of time with him.
Now, obviously your mom played polo, and we've established that, which is how you got into polo. Did you ever try anything else? Were you interested in anything other than polo growing up as a kid?
Pretty much my time was consumed with riding horses and practicing polo, doing whatever I thought I needed to do to improve. I did try some other horse sports, along those lines, because we used to, as kids, my mom trained horses, the hard horses that were, difficult to deal with. So as we were kind of like the crash dummies, and we'd jump on them, be the ones to go ride them and find out where the hole was. So I tried all kinds of different sports, jumping, dressage, eventing, and did some vaulting, minor stint at that. But, in school, I was usually traveling, so I never really got committed to any sports. I got talked into playing a couple, but I just never really got hooked on anything. And truly, I just realized that polo was really all I wanted to do.
Now so we all know the typical horse girl growing up could care less about school and would rather just be out riding their pony. Was that the way it was for you?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed school. I actually did like it. We traveled a lot. We moved around, so I was in different schools. But I actually really enjoyed school. But definitely, I wanted to be with the horses and improving.
Now, I read also that your mom was a single parent and that there was a struggle financially growing up on the Carmel Ranch, that
things
weren't always easy, were they?
Oh, no. My parents divorced when I was at a young age. And she was a single parent. And we basically, when we were young, she put us to work. You were upright. You need to go to work. So, I still run into people today that, and it's actually pretty funny if you think about it, that I used to give polo lessons to when I was about 12 or 13 years old. So I'm not sure what they were thinking that they went for it, but to this day, it's just a funny phenomenon. But to the families that have grown up like that, you just make do with whatever you have and you just, get through it. So we definitely did. We definitely, when our family, had to just dig in and go to work. That's kind of what we did.
I know that at least one of your siblings ended up in the horse world. How about the others? Did they?
You know what? Everybody just kind of went their own directions. As life kind of takes you in, you get into all kinds of stuff. So I'm kind of the only one that really, stuck it out with the polo. I have one sibling that was in polo for a while, then took a break to have some kids, and then, kind of making a reentrance into it. But for the most part, they kind of went to lead what non-horse people call normal lives.
Less expensive lives.
Well, just normal ones. Normal ones that don't include 25-hour days in the barn.
That's right. Well, now, you started, what age did you start playing polo regularly? I mean, where you really were into it.
As a teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah, my first tournament was when I was 10, the first one that I remember, and that was actually the only reason I played. It's a women's tournament that my mom and sister had organized, and somebody at the last minute couldn't make it. I was the only one there by gender was able to play. So they sat me down with a yellow legal pad of paper, said, here's the rules, you're going to play tomorrow, and that was the start of it. And, so I started playing competitively. As a teenager is really when I started to play on a regular basis.
Polo, I imagine, is a lot like anything else. If you start playing when you're young and you start playing when you're a teenager, it's much easier to learn than when you're an adult.
Yeah, yes and no. Yes, it is, because when you're young, you're flexible and you're just so open-minded to everything. As you age, and I've taught polo my whole life and coached different people, as you age, you tend to have made a lot more decisions. You think twice about things, whereas when you're a kid, you just grab it and go for it.
Right.
So that's kind of the difference. But there's so many people today that are taking on the sport in their 30s and 40s because they've done everything else. And they see something new. And when they first introduce themselves to polo, they're so enamored by how much It truly is a great sport if you like horses. It's one of the greatest equine sports you can do and one of the most fun things to do with a horse. So it's something that it will consume you for sure, and it's definitely, you know, you are able to learn and play polo even starting in your 30s, 40s. In fact, I started a gal who wanted to come take polo lessons. She was in her 60s. I thought it was awesome. She would come take lessons and, you know, just had so much fun. So really you can start it at any age, but, you know, to those that are fortunate that started, you know, at a young age, you know, it's sometimes it can be a little bit easier.
Now, you were, by the time you were 18, you had turned professional, hadn't you?
Yeah, I turned professional somewhere around 18 to 20 when I first started to get paid to play in tournaments. And that was kind of something that was just not done before. Women didn't get played, you know, paid to play polo. That was like, you know, that was pretty much unheard of. That's about the right time frame, yeah.
So then came the United States Women's Open in 1990, where you had the opportunity to play with your mom and Stormy, your sister you were talking about, who was into polo for a while, and also one of France's leading polo-playing women. And you got to play in that tournament, and that must have been a real treat for you and your family.
Yeah, that tournament was really a lifetime of work on my mom and sister's part and everything that they had brought to the table as far as for women's polo in America. So that tournament, which was supported by the Empire Polo Club, Alex Hagen in California, is truly amazing opportunity, as we had so much support from some of the best high goal players of their day were there, and they supported it. And we even had a coach that was you know, growing up was an idol in the sport, and Joe Berry, he was our coach. And so just to be able to be a part of that tournament, and especially now seeing the evolution of where women's polo is going, that's truly a historical moment to be able to, you know, be a part of that.
Did you get to play with your mom a lot?
When I was growing up, I did, you know, as a kid, definitely. And then, you know, it's kind of life as everybody, as you kind of grow up and move out of the nest and you go your separate ways. You know, I didn't later in life, but I did as a kid, yeah.
Now, did she treat you, this is always a question you want to ask, because she was a coach, she taught many other people, and she trained horses, and she did all of that. Do you think she was tougher on you as her child than she was on her other students? Did she expect more of you?
Well, I think all parent kid relationships think that. I don't think there's anybody now that I coach that doesn't have a parent on the sidelines, or a parent, you know, or a kid that's watching their parent play that isn't hard on them. So you always, you know, it's just always that way. And I always say to spouses and, you know, who are playing, okay, just you got to, this is the way you need to look at it. So, you know, I think with anybody, I think it's always harder to take instruction from a parent, whereas some random person can say the exact same thing and you take it a whole different way. Like you found something, you know, some little unbelievable piece of knowledge.
I was wondering too when I was reading your bio, because you were so close, and as a family, you guys were in the family business, which is really polo and training mm-hmm. ponies and giving lessons and thing. You were all part of the family business. And was there the rebellion? Did you have the rebellious time? Did Sonny rebel at some point?
What do you mean? Define rebel.
Like every teenager does, where they go, oh, I don't want anything to do with this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean for polo? Oh,
yeah, or with the family or mom or, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a complete satellite for my family. I mean, we grew up working together. She was a single parent. All of us did whatever we needed to do. But I kind of went out on my own when I was in my early 20s and never looked back. And so, you know, rebel, oh, yeah, because all I wanted to do was play polo. So any other conforming, you know, structure that was anybody was trying to put on me in my life, I just, and not in a bad way, I just went the other way, you know, so because I just truly wanted to play polo. So, but yeah, I was a complete satellite to just head off in my own direction.
And where did you head at that point in your young 20s when you headed off? What happened?
I basically just, like everybody does when they find something that they're going to go after, you know, it led me all over the world, actually. I mean, I moved around the United States and now, you know, I travel around the world as well as the United States, playing polo and promoting the organizations I started.
And now and this might help others who are, you know, other women or other men for that matter, who are wanting to get into polo. When you went out, to play. You were still one of the first women that were playing at the caliber and the level that you were playing at. And, you know, I read some quotes that you had. It wasn't totally easy for you either at that point, being a woman in a man's sport.
Well, basically what I wanted to do, my chosen occupation at the time, which there really weren't any women in that occupation. So there's no resume that you submit. There's no, job finder service. You have to basically earn any position you have based on your talent, and it's basically word of mouth. So what I did was, one is I had the desire to play in the best polo in the United States with the best players. So getting on teams at all different levels just took, you know, practice. And I got on those teams for basically my talents and being able to work with other teammates. So one job would lead to another job to another job, which finally led to coming to Palm Beach in 1993, where I got my very first professional job. Which, for those viewers that are not familiar, West Palm Beach, Florida, Wellington to be specific, is pretty much the Wall Street. If you're a stockbroker, you go to Wall Street. So if you're a polo player, you want the best polo in America, you go to Wellington, Florida in the winter. And I got my first job opportunity as a professional in Wellington in 1993. And that one, playing on that team, led to another team at a higher level, which led to several more opportunities. So no, at that time, there were no paid women professionals playing. I would have to say I was probably the first one that was actually a paid professional. There's some women that own teams. They would play as amateurs, and maybe there's some girls that would sub in that were excellent players. So kind of that field that I was in was kind of a one-of-a-kind, but truly an amazing opportunity to be able to play. If you think about it, it would be like dropping me into Michael Jordan's team, you know, in the NBA Finals. And people were very okay with it because they're based on my skill. Was it easy? No, but anybody at my handicap, at my skill level, you know, in comparison to the skill levels on the field, you know, you're gonna take some heat. But that goes without saying.
Yeah, well, that's that. You know, even guys going into a guy's team, like you were talking about, are going to get that when they're rookies.
Oh yeah. Like the newest guy on Michael Jordan's team, he's going to take some heat. He's going to have to get after it to try and match up. But the opportunity to be able to play with the caliber of player, that's what I wanted. And so none of that really mattered.
Although you were quoted as saying that that you knew more swear words and more languages than probably any girl your age.
Now, where did you find that? That's funny. No, I can tell you a large dictionary of words that I've never heard before, but that's when you just kind of go numb and you realize the lips are moving, but it doesn't mean anything. You just keep doing what you're doing.
What did you find, in those early days when you were in your 20s and you were working your way up through to become one of the top female players in the world? What were the biggest challenges you found along the way?
For me, I think the biggest challenges is listening to people over and over who had a different plan for what I should do, for how I should do it, and what I shouldn't go after because of some hurdles they thought or they knew about. I think the hardest challenge was to sit quietly, listen to it without comment. And, you know, I just know, you know, I'd know in my mind and my heart, I was like, okay, whatever you just said, but I'm still going after it and I will get it. And I think that was pretty much the hardest part, is just to sit quietly, not bite, and continue to do what I thought I wanted to do. I think that's truly the hardest thing.
And you, financially, was it tough being out on your own those years, or was there enough coming in to eat?
No. As with anybody that's in the equestrian world, you really have to, if this is something you want to do as an occupation, you have to truly have an edge. You have to have something different or know something or truly believe in what you're doing in order to figure out the finance side, unless you have a backer or you have you came from money. You know, that's something that you have to constantly figure out how to produce in order to be there. So that was always part of the picture, to be able to put that whole puzzle together.
So then in the year 2000, you had an opportunity to play on a pretty good team in a pretty good tournament.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Pretty good tournament would be defined as the premier tournament in the United States, the U.S. Open. And the pretty good team was the good fortune of playing the Outback Steakhouse team owned by Tim Gannon, who had won the Open four or five times, had hired the best professional player in the world, Adolfo Cambiasso, and they had started, heading towards the U.S. Open. They'd been planning for the year previous with the team that they'd organized. They had two or three warm-up tournaments they were going to play with that team before the Open. So there's a lot of preparation that had gone into place. I was nowhere on the roster or even on the radar. And somewhere in the warm-up tournament, the owner decided that he wanted to not play in the U.S. Open. He wanted to give that opportunity to his best friend, who had been also his team manager and best friend since college, in Phil Healy. And so what that did is it changed the dynamics of the fourth professional that could fit on that team. So it was pretty amazing. Tim had just decided, you know what, I've won this tournament about four times. I don't feel the same chemistry as I did those other times. And instead of just go through the motions, I'm going to give the opportunity to my best friend. I'm going to sit down. And he went to Adolfo. He told him what he wanted to do. And they together, they needed what's called in polo, your handicap. They needed a four handicap player. And they chose me. They called me and said, would you like to play in the U.S. Open? And, of course, I said, gee, let me check. Nope. Do I want to play?
See if I'm busy that weekend.
I'm available. Oh, yes, I'm available, and I'm ready today. So I really didn't get any prep time. It was kind of like, I'm in, got the call, showed up, and, the rest was history. We went undefeated, and one of the greatest experiences, I think, in my life.
And that was in Southern Florida at that point? Was that helpful?
Yeah, that was in Wilmington, Florida in 2000.
Gotcha. And that led to the next 5 years of playing, and then in 2005 you established the Women's Championship Tournament to help promote women's polo. Tell us how that came about.
That's funny, because I had played in women's tournaments since I was a kid, and I saw something different because I had the good fortune, even since I was a teenager, to be able to fly around the country and play in women's tournaments. And I'd meet like two or three really excited, amazing women players in one location and maybe four in another location. And maybe I met some and I went to Jamaica and played and met a few over there. And I kept thinking to myself, God, there's got to be a way to network that enthusiasm, that type of professionalism, for that group of women that wanted to really compete against each other, have a good time, but truly were sportsmen at the end of the day. And so I was on a plane flying to Singapore, and it was my first trip going there to play. And I thought to myself, 9 hours into the flight, for any of you that have flown that far, and looking over the water going, my God, can't we do something in the United States to network all these people? And here I am going all the way over here to this side of the world. And so with that, I came up with in my mind this idea for a format that we could network all those type of women through top tournaments played around the United States. I was traveling, to a lot of them anyway. And then I just thought, if you put that group of women together, what could they do as a group? And what actually happened is I created that format in 2005, got it accepted by the Polo Association as, hey, roll with it, it's great. Started the WCT as a corporation to see where it went. And basically what's happened since that point is we have two qualifiers all around the United States and internationally. This year we'll be adding two qualifiers in Argentina. We have one in Singapore, actually, that I'm going to next week. We'll be adding one in Malaysia. And we have one that was in Italy, as well as from, the West Coast, California, all the way to Florida. So what's really fun for me now is to truly see that fun network of you're going to play hard, you're going to go after it, and you can play these tournaments around the country and meet those kind of women. For me, that's been an amazing thing because it really did. Just that idea just started in 2005.
And how many women's teams are there now? There's quite a few, isn't there?
Well, that's the thing. There's tournaments all around the United States and around the world. Women happen to represent one of the largest growing sectors getting into the sport currently, and that's kind of a worldwide pattern. So how many women's teams in total? Couldn't even tell you. But tournament-wise, it's definitely on the rise. And as far as women getting into the sport that have maybe they've rode horses, they tried other horse sports, or they like what they're doing, but they want to try something different, you can now go to one of these WCTs at these clubs and kind of just check it out. See other women play. That's something you want to try. And as women are a lot more cautious than men, they want to go see if you know, let me just go see if I'm not going to make a fool of myself. But these are really, these tournaments and clubs are really open to new players. And so that's the fun part is it's a way for, you know, mainstream people that have never been exposed to polo to kind of get their first look at it, go to one of these tournaments, have a good time. We encourage everybody to go hang out. And it's almost always more important that you have a very good swag bag when you show up and that you put on a good party at the tournament. Because we don't care if you're really good, we're still going to make fun of you.
I'm a driver, yeah. And it's the same way. The party is important. So,
but that's the whole point, you know, and that's, I think, been the fun part for me is just promoting that camaraderie of it, no matter what your character is. But what we don't promote is a bad attitude. If you got a bad attitude, we're probably not going to invite you next time. You need to get over it.
Well, this is a good point to actually discuss. I did want to get into this conversation at some point. You know, I think one of the misconceptions polo has is that it's only a rich man's sport or rich person sport in this case, that you have to be wealthy to play it. And I think that's changing a bit with the smaller teams and with the more local teams available. Isn't that changing?
Well, I think what's changing is that polo is accessible truly to anybody. What is the misconception is that mostly in the media that's ever been promoted about polo, and this is where the assumption comes that it's only for the wealthy, very wealthy, is usually media picks up on polo when a famous person or somebody in royalty or an actor, something happened or they played or they broke a leg or they whatever. And so the only thing that really ever gets shown mainstream is that level of the sport. So when you say that, well, what does that mean? What's the trickle-down effect? It would be like saying, I race cars, and the only thing you ever saw was NASCAR level. You're like, oh, my God, that guy's got $1 million race team.
Right.
No, I actually raced at a dirt track with a little go-kart,
right.
You know, over in Ohio, and I race, you know. And so that's what no one's ever really shown the underneath of truly what exists in America, because probably, you know, 65% of the polo that's played around the United States is by just what you call your weekend warriors, that maybe they got a quarter horse and it ropes during the week and they go to the polo on the weekend, or they rented one from, you know, a polo club and they go grab their two-horse trailer and they go play on the weekend and they don't see polo again until the next weekend. So, you know, that's kind of the side that's never really been really just, you know, put a flashlight on.
And, you know, I think also we've all heard, especially those of us in the horse world and outside for that matter, that you need 6 horses and, you know, you've got to have the full string and the whole thing. And you know, you're right, for you don't really need that on a whole, yeah, to play, yeah, at the lower levels.
Yeah, no, not at all. And see, that's the thing is that if you take WCT, for instance, this is a fun part for women that maybe they have a business that they do or they run or they work in corporations, is that they can actually literally, without owning a horse, they can call one of these clubs and say, hey, I want to play in one of these tournaments. How do I do it? There's usually lease horses available where you can show up, rent your horse, or, hey, I want to, you know, come play at your club. You can go do it and not even own the horse. So it's, you know, it's kind of a easy in-out situation. But the issue with polo is that the conception is that just like NASCAR, if all you ever saw was NASCAR, you think if you race, you have to have $1 million team. Tony Stewart's going to drive for you, and that's what it is. But they never show what the backyard little kid in his go-kart, you know, that's part of racing too, or the weekend guys, you know, racing around the country. So that's kind of the thing for polo that is very open. You can call most polo clubs and say, I want to come try a lesson. And all you have to really do is show up with boots with some kind of heel and they'll provide the rest, you know. So in your average polo lesson, it depends on where you are. Sometimes they give them to you for free. I warn you now, it's addicting. That's a trick. It's a really good one. So you might get a couple free polo lessons. But, you know, your polo lessons average anywhere from 50 to 250 a lesson, depending on who it is and the location. So, you know, it's comparable to other sports. If you're in the market to try something new, it is comparable. You don't necessarily have to buy, you know, the whole menu of options. You can take it at whatever your budget level is. That's the addicting part.
Now you got some experience starting a corporation in 2005, and then you apparently hadn't had enough of that. So in 2006, you decided
no, as horse people do, they get an idea, and we just get on and go. And we don't think about the work side. That's how that happens.
I know that feeling.
Yes.
I started out with one show, and now we have eight, you know, so.
Eight? There you are. That's the story of my life.
So you started in 2006, the American Polo Horse Association. Tell us about that and why you did it and what it is.
That was another one, just like the Women's Championship Tournament. I saw something that I was like, my gosh, what would happen if we put all those women together and how much fun it would be? And so that was WCT in 2006. I had been talking about in my mind and to different people for a couple of years, actually. It's like, you know, what do you think if we had like a, wouldn't it be cool if we had like somewhere you could research information about polo ponies in America? Because as ridiculous as it sounds, we are the information age in America, and there was nothing. You couldn't. It would be like going to the racetrack, and basically, instead of getting a handicapper's book on the horses, you basically just sat there and looked at the horses and went, "I like the one in the pink pad. No, I think the one in the red pad is going to win." And for whatever your reason was,
there was no pedigree. There was
nothing.
Oh.
And so the interesting thing about polo is, and I grew up riding horses. All different breeds of horses is polo. You can play on any breed of horse. There is no qualifications saying you have to ride this breed or it has to be this, you know, look like this, or it has to have this many points. Whereas in every other equestrian sport, it's driven by some type of records, whether it's show records, whether it's pedigree, whether it's the club you're in. And polo, your horse is your legs. So if you like clown shoes, bring those. And if you like real running shoes, bring those. So it's truly your choice. There's people that play Arabians, Appaloosas. One of the largest breeds that's very unknown that plays our sport. It's not unknown, but it's unidentified as such as the American Quarter Horse. They're saturated in polo. And in fact, American Polo Horse, we are going to be promoting that. But you can ride any breed. So my point was, well, the only breed registry that existed was in Argentina, and that's a very specific breed that they're actually breeding for, meaning just like if you're breeding quarter horses or thoroughbreds, it's very close. We're breeding for a certain type of horse. So my idea was, I was like, well, gosh, we ride everything in America. What if you just had like this database pool of anybody that had a horse in America? You can register it with us. I figured, of course, the work side was I had to figure out, how are you going to identify these horses, make it verifiable? And that's basically what the American Polo Horse idea concept was, is one, is to recognize these horses, and two, is to create a place where you could identify them so that we have a verifiable start point for breeding going forward of any breed. We don't qualify it. It basically, you're going to get exposure based on what that horse does. And so that's kind of was my idea. Fast forward to 2006. It's definitely, the concept is dead on. It's something that a valuable resource in that somebody can, if you have one polo horse or you have 100, you can register them with us. That horse gets a 5-picture online profile for people all around the world to go look at. Let's say, Glenn, if you played polo and people were like, wow, I want to see what kind of horse Glenn rides, they can go on the internet and it's free. You can go on our website, AmericanPoloHorse.com. And search for your horses, and I could see a 5-picture profile of the horse you ride. So that's really, kind of fun for players to compare and also to recognize the horses. So, yeah, that was my other little idea. So, it kind of got out of control.
And has it taken off? Have people adopted it in the community?
Well, you know what's amazing is what I've come to realize is it's such a valuable resource because we get truly these people that come to the website, they spend a lot of time looking because there's nowhere that anybody groups that type of information together. The second thing that's been truly amazing is to now that we have enough data, is to realize how many of these horses people are playing that are truly from the same bloodlines and families, and the owners have no idea because they never did pedigree research before. They never bothered to keep the papers on the horses. They just tossed them. Polo ponies are usually bought on their type when you look at them, what that people like to look at. And what's funny is, me, I see the data, and I'm very interested in it, so I'm looking through pedigrees all the time, is to realize how many of these top horses are related, and most of the owners have zero clue. Until now, they're, you know, really starting to pay attention. So, and the other thing I think that's really taken off is giving credit to the American polo pony that gets exported around the world. And it has never been really promoted that way before. That's truly been an amazing realization to see that happen.
Well, I do want to put a plug in here, too, for the AmericanPoloHorse.com. You do have some terrific information on there, just not about, you know, keeping track of ponies and their records, but also tips on buying polo ponies and some very useful information for people who are just starting out as well. So,
yeah, just trying to figure out and get a feel for what it is before, pulling the trigger on something.
Yep. No, it's terrific resource. And, and I know how things like that work. You say, we'll get this number, and then it snowballs, and then it's a ton more work than you originally thought.
Oh, no, out of control. It's like we started a Facebook page, and so I'm like, that would be pretty cool for that. Well, let me tell you something. There's like over 3,400 people on there, and the funny part is they just find us organically. I don't know enough or into all the buys and different stuff you can do to promote it. It's just like I wanted the page. So let's just see what people are interested in, and the information that's on there is basically all about the polo ponies and the behind the scenes, what goes on as far as in the grooms, taking care of the horses, promoting those people. And that's what's so much fun, is to see that network just branching out. And what's truly amazing is to see these horses, how many people that really get excited about these horses all around the world. To me, that's when you realize it's worth it.
Well, let's get back to you a little bit here before we wrap up today. We have a series of questions that we ask at the end of every interview.
Yep.
But before I get to that, I have a couple of questions I want to ask you. First, I want to give a plug out to the Cowgirl Hall of Fame, because that's who recommended you in the first place. And it must have been interesting for you to be inducted or nominated to be inducted into the Cowgirl Hall of Fame. That must have taken a double take.
Oh, no, that's a completely humbling honor to be recognized by them. They do such an amazing job in recognizing women that have truly done something in history, that not only benefits themselves, but so many other people. So the fact that I got selected, I think, is just, to me, it was truly one of the greatest honors I think I've had. And, I just can't appreciate it enough.
Where did you played polo around the world? You've played in so many different countries. Is there a place that stands out, one of those moments in time where you said at the time or after that, this is something I'll never forget, this was truly special?
Oh my gosh.
I know there's about 100 of them, right?
I've had great experiences and some of them, you just don't expect, cuz it's an unknown when you go. But truly, I've had so many experiences, and it comes down to great experiences with different people. One of the most recent ones I can remember is I was in Malaysia, which I had never thought I'd go there. And it wasn't that I didn't want to go. I just, I had never thought about it. And I went and played for some of the most fun people. We had such a great trip. And I remember sitting out on the polo field as the sun went down, and they've gotten probably a polo club that's over 100 years old with a kind of an open atmosphere, antique wood kind of feel, open. You can see the polo field. There's an open bar, restaurant, and it had closed that night, the event. We were done playing, and the sun was setting, and so I'd gone out onto the polo field, and I was looking, watching the sun setting, and in the back, you could see the Petronas Towers, for anybody that's familiar with what those are. It was kind of in the background, and I sat there thinking to myself, what an amazing experience that I get to be here doing what I've loved to do my whole life and experience it, and just the camaraderie of those people. That was kind of a moment to me. I've had several of them, but to truly realize you're doing something you love to do, that was amazing.
Now we'll switch it up a little bit. The endurance riders, we've had a number of endurance riders we've interviewed, and of course, because they ride so long and they ride all day, and they ride in really
I give them credit.
I know, in really weird places, and strange things happen, like lightning hitting right by them, and things like that. Is there a time or a place that you can think of that was just wild, and it was one of those stories that you tell your kids?
Oh my gosh. No, I've had lots of those. And that's truly what makes it, at the end of the day, the adventure that it is. But my gosh, to even try and pull one of those out, I've had so many of them. And it truly, anybody that has a horse, or is in a group that has a bunch of horses, you got some wild stories of stuff that happens to you, being broken down on the side of the road to, stranded in at polo clubs because of the rain. And, man, that's a hard question, because there's been so many.
But, and you're right, as horse people, we've all had them.
Some darn good ones.
All right, now the questions we always ask at the end of every interview, and this does not involve horses, actually. Well, it sort of does.
Yep.
What's your favorite food?
Oh, my gosh. Anything that somebody is nice enough to prepare for me that's not spicy or moving.
So does that make you the typical horse girl who doesn't cook?
Oh, I do. I have the cooking scars to show. Yes, I do when I need to.
No favorite food?
No, I'm pretty I like most foods. No, oh. I don't have any particular. Okay. Gotta have it.
What's your favorite music?
I like a blend of everything. I'm all over the map. I like country music. I like some rap. I like I'm all over the map on music.
All right. Every horse girl has an opinion on this. What is your favorite truck? Dodge, Ford, or Chevy?
Dodge, Ford, or Chevy. The one that gets me there and looks good. I've had them all. So, you know what? It depends on the year. It depends on, and I've had them all.
Oh, you have? Okay.
I've actually had them all. And
usually we get a very strong opinion on that topic.
No, you know, I'm funny that way. I truly, it depends on the year or what I've got and what I'm into, and if it's doing the job. So I'm actually not that opinionated one way or the other, as long as it's, you know, as long as it's really good and it's taken care of.
All right. Do you have any other hobbies other than horses that people might not know about?
I actually, too, that is kind of... One is I truly like photography. I like to go out, you know, and photograph wildlife when I have time, which is very limited. And then I've gotten into, for the first time in my life, working with a personal trainer who's a fitness model and MMA competitor. So I have a new focus. I've never done that before, but it's truly, I'm not sure what you call it, a hobby or a true passion now that I'm working at.
I imagine that, you know, playing polo especially, your core has to be, you know, it has to be there. You're not gonna play polo successfully unless you have strength. And, you know, do all polo players work out, or obviously they probably should, or is that something that's becoming more prevalent now?
No, it's actually becoming a trend. Probably in the last five to 10 years, it's starting to become a trend. But for instance, throughout my career, I never worked with a trainer ever. I never did. I never worked out in a gym. What I did was go to the barn and ride horses and train horses and practice. That's how I stayed in shape for what I did. And now, given that, you know, my schedule is completely different, I spend a lot of my time working on the two organizations I started and traveling around the world playing. So I don't spend the time in the barn that I used to. And so I had decided I was going to, like everybody does, that's it. I'm going to start working out. And of course, being the independent person that I am, I was like, I'm not going to sign up with a trainer. I'm just going to go watch what everybody does at a big gym and I'll figure it out. And so in that, I ran into somebody. I saw them training for their sport, what they do, and was completely taken by it. Kind of went up to them, was like, I don't even know what you do. You're some kind of badass. Explain to me what you, and I really did. It was kind of funny, but I've never been so inspired by what I saw this person capably able to do. So I asked him, I said, here's my sport. I said, it's not normal what I do. I'm a professional. I've never worked with a trainer. I want you to look at my sport and then train me. And so thank God he said yes. And he happens to be, you know, just a top-notch trainer and fitness model in his own right and champion in his MMA. So that it has helped me to understand that exactly what you just said. And it's funny now realizing it, outside of doing it in the barn, riding horses in the physical job that most of us women do every day, lifting hay bales and grain sacks and stuff that you just don't even think about. You know, that now in all the different workouts that we do, and they change constantly. And this guy could take you outside and not have one piece of equipment and work you out harder than you could ever imagine. So what you just said is truly amazing. Is you're right. It's exactly your core. If you want to be the best at it, your core strength is truly what's got to be good, and it's helped everything about the way that I ride and my lower back. For all the women that ride that are just sure it's what you're eating, that it's your lower back, and you can't, you know, you're not strong enough or you're hurting, you know, that has made all the difference in the world is training with somebody that knows what they're doing and lives by that, you know, it's truly made a big difference.
Name two things that are still on your bucket list.
my gosh, well, it's a long list. Man, that's hard to nail down. I've got too many. I still have a lot of, and I have a lot of unknowns. That's on my bucket list. A lot of unknowns.
Well, you're due. I mean, it's been, 2006. It's been 6 years since you've started a corporation or association.
I know. So. I'm feeling kind of lazy. I don't know. I think one of the wildest ones, which I guess I'll just throw it out there, is I would like to write a book. I'm not an author by any means. I only went to public school. But it's something that I've been thinking about, and I'm not sure why I should write a book, but that's something that I'm thinking about, because what I've done so far, and no telling what's around the corner, is just completely entertaining. And some of the stories, in fact, even just the teams, getting on some of the teams that have got on, how it actually happened, you know, it looks really smart when you're done, but it didn't happen that way, you know, to get there. So, I guess that's one thing.
Well, that's terrific. Well, we appreciate you being here and talking about this.
Well, I appreciate the interview.
The final question, what's one thing that almost nobody in the polo world knows about you?
Oh, that's a good one.
That's why I always save that one for last.
Polo is a very small world. Everybody pretty much knows everything, just like every horse sport. You think you're so smart, but most people know just about everything. That's a good one. No, there's not too much hidden.
They pretty much know it all.
Well, they don't know at this point that I'm on this show.
They will
come out.
They will very shortly.
Yeah, there's a big secret. I'm about to be on this show. Yeah.
Well, very good. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on everything you've done in the past.
Thank you so
much. I really appreciate it. We could do this again in another 10 years, and you'd have all the same questions over again, because there's going to be so much more to add to that list, and I do hope that that you accomplish most of the things on that bucket list.
No, I truly appreciate it, and it was a pleasure to meet you.